Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, June 1st. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Shop Plaza. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. One thing to know about me, I have worked in three different places where snakes have gotten loose. None of them were my fault, and I won't be elaborating any further at this time. On this episode, we'll be discussing how brands become cool again. My guests today, they're back. First, it's principal analyst Andrew Lipsman. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Sarah. Great to be with you. I'm not saying you were at fault, but it does seem like you might have been the common denominator.
I just was working a lot of places with snakes, and they're really smart. And my other guest, who won't have anything mean to say about me or snakes, it is head of retail and e-commerce practice and principal analyst, Susie David Canyon. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Sarah. You're right. I have nothing bad to say about you or snakes.
See, Susie's already winning this episode.
Oh my God, you know how much I love to win.
Okay. I have no right to give out a belt. Marcus hasn't bestowed that honor on me yet.
Oh my God, I'm so excited that that's a potential.
We'll talk. All right. It is time for news and reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline comes from CNBC, and it is Klarna to lay off 10% of its workforce as souring economy hits buy now, pay later space. Susie, your review in 60 seconds of this Klarna headline is...
I was a little bit shocked because Klarna was one of the big darlings of the buy now, pay later movement. But at the same time, we know that they've been trying really hard to become a super app, which is obviously not a big thing in the US yet. And it is, you know, rooted with retailers who are not doing especially well right now. So not really a surprise. Retailers aren't leaning into buy now, pay later maybe as much as they were once. And so there's your headline, 10% for workforce cut.
All right. So taking the super app angle. Andrew, your review of this headline about Klarna laying off 10% of its workforce in 60 seconds is...
I think it's unfortunately par for the course right now. There's a rationalization in the market, market forces at play. We saw Instacart have to take a haircut with their latest funding. So I think it's a pretty similar thing at play. Anytime you get a company into hypergrowth, right, they tend to get a little ahead of their skis. They get a little bit big. So I think this is probably kind of a natural correction, right sizing. Always unfortunate when people lose their jobs, but I don't see anything particularly dramatic about this beyond what's happening in the broader market.
Interesting. Thank you both for your reviews of that headline. We're going to jump into our main topic now and our main segment. It is time for Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail concept. So today we're here to talk about brand revitalization and how retailers reinvent themselves to stay relevant. Before we dive too deep into that, Andrew, can you explain for me what a brand comeback is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in its simplest terms, it's, you know, when you have an established brand or an established retailer, over time, growth stops, it slows down, and then oftentimes it goes into some sort of a decline. And oftentimes, right, that decline never really stops. And it ultimately spells the end of a company. But sometimes brands and retailers can get rejuvenated. So when they turn around that revenue, sometimes it can be a pronounced spike if they really capture a trend or the zeitgeist of the moment again. But really any trend reversal on revenue to me is what that means.
Gotcha. How does that like differ from just a good season?
So I think that, well, longevity is the answer to that, right? So if you capture one cool trend like millennial pink or white sneakers and you see a spike in sales and then you don't get ahead of the fashion trends and you just don't have anybody who is sort of sticking to you and your brand, then you're going to start losing steam. And so it's the idea around how many seasons are you really losing steam? And for some brands, it happens right away. But for other brands, it's a slow decline as the brand becomes less and less cool.
Okay, sounds good. I'm still waiting for Beanie Baby's big comeback. So to make a comeback, first, a brand has to fall from grace. How does a brand lose their way, Susie?
So this is really another one of my favorite topics because there are so many ways. And I think at the core of that is, for me, one of the biggest examples is JCPenney, right? It was doing well. They got a new person to come in. He wanted to make a mark on the brand. He didn't think about who their customer base was. He wanted to use his playbook from another brand to like reapply it to a brand without really understanding it. And they lost big time. And this is one of those where I'm not really sure that I would like for them to make a comeback and be at the top again in some way, shape, or form. I believe in department stores. I'm not sure they're there yet, but I think mm-hmm. That's the crux, right? Not remembering who your customer is and trying to change them too quickly.
Gotcha. So losing touch with your core customer.
Yeah. I mean, very related to that. I think, Sarah, you and I talked about D2C brands, and I've been covering that quite a bit lately. One of the reasons why disruptor brands were able to disrupt the industry incumbents was because those incumbents just lost touch, not just with their core customer, but consumer trends, right? You had millennial or Gen Z consumers come up who were very different. They had different needs. The world was changing around them. And you had a lot of brands that basically just were attuned to that. They knew the brand aesthetic that the consumers wanted. They messaged them correctly. They provided product features that had not been addressed. So I think just aligning with the modern consumer is essential. But, you know, a lot of brands that have been around for a long time kind of stick with the playbook that has always worked for them until it stops working.
Or until they take that playbook, throw it out, and try and do something completely new that's not authentic, and then they lose their way all over again. So unfortunately, there are so many different ways that you can lose your way, but probably in addition to understanding your core consumer and who is actually buying you and what are the consumer trends that they care about, it's if you are not authentic about it, then you're going to probably start to lose them as well.
Gotcha. So we have like losing touch with that core customer, losing touch with the trends that they're interested in, or like losing touch with the beat. It sounds like we were also talking about consumer experience. Andrew, I think that's what you were hitting on with like D2C, making sure you're meeting consumers where they want to be met, and then losing your brand, losing your heritage. Does that sort of cover it? Anything to add to that?
Yeah, just on the customer experience, right? We see this a lot with coverage of department stores, for example, right? Department stores really held a very special place if you go back a generation or two. But we've seen a lot of them, frankly, the customer experience inside the four walls has atrophied. The merchandising isn't as strong. And consumers pick up on that over time. Or maybe there are certain aspects of customer service that are just terrible. And so you stop wanting to interact with a brand. A lot of DTC brands, frankly, did right by consumers early on by just having, you know, accessibility. Mm-hmm. You could email with real people. It wasn't a call center. It wasn't this just like horrible customer service experience. So if you let that CX atrophy, you lose customers over time.
Yeah.
And the other thing that happens with department stores and other non-digitally native brands is that they get very excited, right? They see a little bit of growth and then they push out even further. So they dilute their own brand by being in too many places, and then they lose control over their brand. Over time, they lose control over the pricing. And then all of a sudden everything is on sale because it's out in the marketplace in too many places. It's too far. And so department stores need to cut back on the prices to get rid of the merchandise. And then all of a sudden that brand that was so cool is always on sale. And somehow that signals not so cool anymore.
I think it's interesting that you bring up like exclusivity, because I cheated in preparing for this podcast. I phoned some friends and I asked them like what brand sort of they felt fit this bucket of having not been cool for a while and now being back. Every single person I asked who was like my age, a woman, said Abercrombie and Fitch, which when I was in middle school was so cool, but you brought up exclusionary. I looked this up. In 2006, their CEO said, "A lot of people don't belong in our clothes and they can't belong. Are we exclusionary? Absolutely." So on the other hand, you have Abercrombie and Fitch saying something absolutely offensive about plus size bodies. And I don't know that they saw immediate backlash from that, but that definitely is no longer the like in social concept right now. Fortunately, to some extent, we're in a little bit better of a space in terms of size inclusivity. And Abercrombie's clearly adapted. They're offering more sizes now.
I think they also lost their way in terms of, it's a little bit of what happened to J. Crew. A lot of these vertical brands, right? J. Crew, Gap, Banana, they just kept giving us the exact same thing over and over again and didn't sort of stay, like, they had a hero product or look or silhouette, and that's just all they kept doing versus changing with the times. What you're talking about is more what Andrew was referring to before in terms of like consumer sentiment and like what's happening, cultural trends, which obviously Abercrombie did not meet early on, but those have also changed, right? What was happening in the early 2000s isn't quite exactly what's happening now. They are on the verge, I would argue not necessarily, but some would say, like your friends, that they are making a comeback, and it's probably because they have thought through their offering in a very different way now.
Very similar trend with Victoria's Secret, right? I mean, these are brands that were selling exclusivity. And that's great for a while until the trends completely move towards inclusivity, right? Now you're on the outside looking in, kind of ironic.
We're talking about social trends and fashion trends, I feel like two different like waves of trend.
They go hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree.
For sure. What's the playbook for becoming cool again? Is there a playbook? Is it reading the room? How do brands become cool again? Andrew, I'll let you kick that one off.
How does one become cool again? It's hard to know.
Yeah,
that.
What I'm asking you is how we can all become cool again.
See, I mean, here's why it's difficult. Some of us have to be cool in the first place. So my kids definitely don't see me that way. No, I mean, I think, you know, it's part of it is just a subtle shift in staying attuned to trends, right? You can actually be exclusive, for example, when the ethos of the time rewards that. But you can't lose touch with the consumer as they start to evolve. You need to see those trends creeping in towards inclusivity. Any of these brands could have gotten out ahead of that well in advance. They were 10 years too late to finally respond to it. And at that point, it had come to a head and they were actually kind of seen as bad guys. It certainly doesn't help when you have executives, you know, putting their foot in their mouth. But I think there are just ways to stay better attuned to where the customer's at today.
Yeah. So like staying on top of sort of forecasting, like where it's all headed. Susie, anything to build off of that?
Yeah, I think it's also consumer. If you can lean on your consumer insights team and get a little bit ahead. So it's both using forecasting from a sales perspective, but also forecasting from a fashion trends perspective, right? So if you can get ahead of the trends that are happening so that you're offering product, because you have to think about it 6 months to a year ahead of time, the designers. So if you can get ahead of it so that you offer what's cool when it's going to be cool, when mainstream America and or wherever you live is ready to buy that, then you're sort of going to capture and keep that cool. But if you fall behind, then you're not cool.
I think that there's also some of the cool factor is really just the aesthetics of branding. What's interesting is I think a lot of brands just start to look tired and then they'll do some sort of like total facelift, which also tries to over modernize and they completely miss the mark on that. I think what a lot of brands now are starting to settle into is brands that have rebranded terribly, moved back to something closer to their heritage. So it actually calls upon their heritage, but it's refreshed in enough of a way that I think it breathes a little bit of new life into the brand. The first one that comes to my mind here, which isn't in fashion or apparel, but Burger King did this. They really had a terrible logo from the 90s.
And a terrible mascot, that plastic man.
Yeah. So they kind of went back to the logo. I think a lot of brands, you know, Gap actually missed the mark when they did that famous rebrand probably 10 years ago now. So I think kind of going back to your heritage, but finding a way to stay fresh is important.
And then I would throw in 2022, which is not different than 2010. It's like forgetting what year we're in. In modern times, it's also about influencer marketing. Like that's what we're calling it now. And before that, it was just getting your product in the right hand of a cool person who would talk about it or be shown with it on would really help catapult you into coolness.
So you guys are talking about what I want to talk about, which is examples of brands that have become cool again or brands that have failed at trying to become cool again. We've covered how brands fall from grace. We've covered the playbook for becoming cool again. After the break, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of which brands have actually made themselves cool again. But first, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor, Shop Plaza. Your sassiest friend, e-commerce pal, and business bud. Shop Plaza keeps it real, keeps it simple, and keeps it all in a single platform. So, no matter where you are, what you're selling, or what your business size, you can tech your business to the next level. Whether you are looking to grow your business, gain an amazing solution, or become a partner, go to shopplaza.com. That's shopplaza.com to learn more. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. So today I've asked Susie and Andrew to share with me their top two brands that have succeeded at what I keep failing to do, become cool again. Pausing for Victoria to edit in a laugh track there. In addition, Susie and Andrew are going to explain how other companies can borrow from these brands' playbooks and potentially become cool again. So, Susie, I'm going to hand it to you first for your first brand that has successfully become cool again. What is it?
Sure. So for me, I think it's one that we talk a lot about, especially if you're in the department store space. It's Coach. I think we know, I mean, part of it is what we had said before, right? They have a strong heritage. They were founded in the 1940s. And then they were doing extremely well. And then they tanked. And I think part of the tanking, my words, my very official words, they tanked. Part of that was that they alienated their core, right? They started going after the aspirational luxury, which is not what they were. They started following a trend, which at the time was very cool, which is that logo mania in the early 2000s, where everything was just plastered with logos. And they didn't realize that that's not who their core customer is. And they also didn't get off of that trend quickly enough. And so then all of a sudden, everybody was stuck with all these Coach C, and it wasn't even the leather bags. It was like the fabric C's all over the bags that nobody wanted to buy.
I won a denim bag covered in Coach C's in a raffle in 2009, and I used it all the time. And then one day someone told me it was an ugly bag, and I'd never thought of if it was ugly or not. I was like, it's Coach.
Yeah, right.
So they've become cool again?
So 5-10 years ago now, they had a little big turnaround in that they started figuring it out, right? So they started pulling back on all the C-logoed goods. They started going back to their heritage silhouettes. They also, which is one of the things we were talking about in the first segment, started doing collaborations with icons that weren't necessarily hand-in-hand with Coach as a brand to get a whole new consumer buy-in and get some legitimacy out of it.
By icons, you mean influencers?
Yeah, and even just iconic brands like that were not synonymous with Coach. Like they did something big with Opening Ceremony, and nobody would have ever thought Opening Ceremony and Coach would go together. To Andrew's point, they rethought about their design. They had a new designer come in. They revived some of their original looks. And then most important for Coach, at least, they realigned their distribution strategy and they made sure to try and get their products in the right spots and so that they weren't offered at a discount.
Gotcha. Andrew, Susie volleyed it over to you. What's a brand that you think has become cool again?
So I'm just realizing there's a connection here between the brand that I chose, which is Champion, and the common thread.
It's the C.
I'll give you a little bit of history here. Both were acquired by Sara Lee Corporation, which my dad happened to work for about 20 years.
So it's your dad made them cool again?
Or your dad's the reason they fell from grace? He had very little to do with that. But I will say this.
This is Sara Lee, like the ham?
Well, I think of it like the pound cakes.
Moving.
Yes, the food brand. No, but they owned a lot of apparel brands. Hanes, so some major ones. It was a big conglomerate, right? And, you know, I wonder if there is a common theme here, though, in getting acquired by a big conglomerate. Because with Champion, I mean, I loved this brand in the early 90s. They were integrated into NBA uniforms, USA basketball, all the cool stuff of the early 90s that I was really into. And then, you know, something happened along the way in the mid or late 90s where the brand just got diluted. I think the brand went into Target and Walmart and big box retail. And I think it just lost its luster. So we talked about brand dilution. That happened. To what extent, you know, the acquiring company was responsible for that, I don't know. But that may have been part of it. That's how it lost its way.
And then they became cool?
They became cool again. You know, they kind of jumped on the ethos of Supreme, which was, you know, hyper cool. Similar look.
Yeah.
They started to work with influencers. You started seeing, you know, athletes and rappers and musicians and things wearing Champion again. And, you know, Chance the Rapper is one that jumps out to me. But it just, you know, all of a sudden it started to kind of come back and filter through social media So, you know, it was cool to see that that brand that had a lot of cachet at one point was able to rejuvenate.
Gotcha. Susie, I'm handing it back to you. We have Coach, we have Champion. Does your brand also start with a C?
I mean, not technically, but it could. It's called Keds.
Close enough.
And you know what? I picked, I mean, there are so many brands that have gone through these ups and downs, and I picked Keds for so many reasons. One, because I participated in their early 80s and 90s comeback. So I didn't realize it's over 100 years old, the brand, pretty much. And they have a very long heritage of off and on cool. Apparently Marilyn Monroe wore them in her heyday. And then they made a comeback in the early 80s and 90s with Jennifer Grey. Do you guys remember what her big movie was?
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing.
That's it.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off is the correct answer, by the way.
If we don't bring a rom-com up every podcast episode, I quit.
So she brought them back because she had them on.
The White
during,
Keds.
Yes, she had the White Keds on. And then it was also featured by Donna Karan on her runway. So it was like the cool factor plus the fashion credibility that helped it soar. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of started coming down again. And I think the reason they came down a second time was because they didn't realize, so they were originally thought of as a white sneaker, sort of a basic. And then all of a sudden, as Andrew had said, there are all these new brands that are coming up, right? And they're much cooler. And running shoes became a fashion statement. And now there was so much more competition and Keds just wasn't keeping up. Mm-hmm. So they have revamped their assortment. They have much more color and much more patterned. And now they're back on people's feet again, like Emily, I don't know how to say her last name.
Radikowski.
Yes. She was apparently spotted wearing them not so long ago.
I've been spotted wearing them not so long ago as well.
But then you're cool. You know you've made it when the InStyle magazine's headline is Forgotten Sneaker Makes a Major Comeback, and they're talking about Keds.
Okay. Andrew, another CK sound?
It is, in fact, another C.
Really? Is. What is it?
Crocs.
More
Crocs.
Shoes. More shoes I own.
Yes. So Crocs, right, was like a fad in the early 2000s. I think the early 2000s. And then it just tanked overnight, it seemed like. Kind of went away, or at least I wasn't paying attention to it for a long time. And I don't know, in my mind, it was the equivalent of like wearing socks with sandals, right? Just like
I was always wearing socks with Crocs.
the uncoolest of dads, that's what they wore. But you know, it actually had a couple of upturns and downturns. And what's interesting is most recently, it was starting to become cool again, or at least the revenue was increasing for a few years pre-pandemic. But then the pandemic came, and talk about capturing the zeitgeist of the casualization trend, right? Everybody's just walking around their house all day long. So Crocs really became cool in that moment. But I would say, you know, I was thinking about what would happen if Crocs really was uncool at that moment. I don't know that it would have been able to ride that trend. And when I say ride the trend, I think I was looking at the data earlier. I hope I get these numbers right. I think it went from $1.3 billion to $2.3 billion in revenues in the pandemic. I mean, that's huge.
Wow.
I gotta say, I'm still a Crocs wearer, especially in my house. I'm wearing the same pair of Crocs I got in fifth grade. So good for them for making durable shoes, but they're losing that new revenue.
Although to that point, I did go to the Crocs outlet when I was out in the Hampton area, and I can't believe how expensive they are because their revenue has increased like almost twofold because they also have so many different silhouettes from the original Crocs. They have slippers that are lined with fake fur that are so soft, a little bit like a la Uggs, but they were so expensive. I was like, no, it's like a plastic shoe. There's no way I'm spending that much money on
it. That sounds like fat margins to me, Susie, and that sounds like a good business.
I guess. That's why I'm not cool, right? Because I would never spend that kind of money on plastic slippers.
That is all we have time for today. We're going to continue the conversation of which one of us is the coolest off air, or you can email us and let us know what you think at podcast@emarketer.com. That's all we have time for today, though. I have to go figure out more information on how to becoming cool again. I was cool before, I swear. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you, Susie.
Thanks for having me. This was so much fun.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Sarah.
And thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and who just told me she owns a shiny new pair of Crocs and has never once stopped being cool. I'll see you next week for another episode of Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail. an eMarketer podcast made possible by ShopPlaza, where I'll be talking with Susie and principal analyst from our payments desk, David Morris, about buy now, pay later. And tune in tomorrow for Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast. Bye.